Steve, welcome back. It's good to speak with you again. In today's episode of the Information Security Forum podcast, today we're discussing third-party suppliers and their role in managing business and customer data. I think it's fair to say that until recently, many organizations have underestimated either the importance of engaging with their third-party suppliers or the amount of resources required to do so effectively. And yet third-party suppliers are critical in supporting business activities and often have access to vital data. This now puts the spotlight on the security function to take immediate action to review their third-party suppliers and how they are storing and using data. Interestingly enough, following a recent survey of ISF members, it was found that while approximately half of the organizations have a framework in place to manage third-party relations, they don't regularly review and update it, and so they lack a clear understanding of the data that is shared with them. Surely this will impact their ability to meet the EU GDPR legislation. So, Steve, what should an organization be doing to ensure that their third parties have sufficient controls in place to satisfy GDPR compliance?
It's a good question to start with, Tafer, and I think that it's much broader than just GDPR compliance because, you know, we need to bear in mind that GDPR is only really looking at personally identifiable information, and clearly third parties have access into all sorts of mission-critical data across the enterprise, of which perhaps personal information is just one small part. So I think that whilst GDPR has really forced a bit of a resurrection in terms of understanding how personal information is shared with third parties, there is still, you know, a very large amount of data across the enterprise that doesn't fall under the remit of GDPR. So what can you do? Well, the first thing that you have to do is really understand your vendor. What do I mean by that? Well, it's about understanding how critical that vendor is to your organization, how that vendor shares information with you, what information is being shared between the two of you, and how it is being stored, managed, used. It's also important to understand what the vendor might do with that information come end of life. So either when the information is no longer of interest, or indeed on contract termination. And those are the sorts of things that you really need to establish. And that's what I mean by know your vendor. I think the second thing that you need to do is really, and this came out in the survey that you alluded to that we took of ISF members, it is about having a vendor framework. You know, organizations will have multiple different vendors. You don't necessarily want to have the same level of security being applied across all of those vendors. It does come down to the information that's being shared. So do build out a vendor framework that really provides you with the input on the vendors that you have and the importance of those vendors, both to your business and reflecting the data that you share with them. I think the third point is to really understand where data is being stored, for example, in the cloud. Not all of it may be stored in that way. And indeed, you may be under the impression that you're not storing certain data in the cloud, but your third-party vendor might be. So again, it's about really trying to get your arms around this extension of the supply chain, if I could put it that way, and really looking at how security is implemented across each and every stage of that chain. Then we come down to the piece that everybody hopes that they'll never have to implement, mm-hmm. which is really instructions on what happens when a thing goes wrong. You know, what happens when a breach occurs? How do you report that? So what should your third party or your vendor be doing? What's its obligation to you? How soon should it be reporting a breach? Some of those guidelines are set, obviously, particularly if it's to do with personal information. The GDPR is very clear on that. But it's always worthwhile, I think, from an organizational standpoint, having your own process in place. So the vendor reporting a breach to you, what action do you then take with across the enterprise? That will depend on the severity of it, of course. It may go right the way up to the boardroom in terms of your CEO having to make various statements and so on if it's a serious breach. The important thing to remember about this is you need to get all of these things done and the processes developed ahead of time. Mm-hmm. Because when a breach happens, the one thing you don't have is the luxury of time. Everybody is expecting information. You have to be credible. And research shows that if you can credibly respond to a breach in those opening few hours when it goes public, you're much, much better placed to actually survive the breach impact. So that's about the things going wrong. And then finally, it is about having a contract review timeline in place. So, you know, when do you have to review some of the contracts? What are going to be the terms of reletting some of those contracts? What's the involvement that security has in that particular space? Very often with a lot of organizations, of course, this is something that's done by procurement. It's not something that ever gets close to security. And so what organizations need to do is to take a slightly different perspective on the way in which they manage third parties. It isn't good enough anymore to look at it by contract value, mm-hmm. which has been the traditional way in which you manage your third parties. You know, so if it's below X million, for instance, in a large organization, it's a fairly simple process. Because even though from a contractual value perspective, it may not be very high, some of the data that's being shared in itself could have a very significant impact on the business. So it is about setting that contract review timeline with very clear expectations on both sides as to how the discussions will go and what the requirements might be. So I think that those are, you know, just five or so different ways in which you can go about just ensuring that third parties understand the different level of controls, and indeed from your organization's standpoint that you've got some of those controls embedded as well.
Mm-hmm. How does the ISF help its members build security and compliance into their internal assessment framework, as well as third-party engagement contracts? What are the key components to creating a framework?
Yeah, and this, you know, it won't come as any surprise. This is an area that the ISF has spent a lot of time and a lot of effort focusing on. We have our standard of good practice, of course, which outlines different controls and the ways in which that maps across the different standards. So the NIST cybersecurity framework, for instance, if you happen to be a fan of that, and a lot of our members are, particularly those that are based in the United States, ISO, for instance, or indeed, PCI, if you happen to be in the retail space. So the standard good practice really tries to capture all of those, provide that overlay in terms of the sorts of controls that you need to have there. So that's a very good starting point for a lot of organizations, and our members certainly use that piece of research extensively. Moving on from that, though, it is about drilling down into understanding your assets, your mission-critical data assets, really being able to identify where they are, the impact that the loss of them would have on the business. And a little while ago, we produced a piece of work called Protecting the Crown Jewels, which aimed specifically at that. It's about, you know, how do you know which elements of your business are mission critical? How do you identify those? How do you protect those? And it's to the point I was making earlier that very often we'll be sharing that information. It may not have a high contract value, but the value of that piece of data to the business could really be the difference between success and failure in certain instances. So it's about identifying those as well. So you've got your overall framework that's provided through the standard of good practice with the controls and so on. It's about how you identify mission-critical information, and there are things like protecting the crown jewels that help you to do that. I think the next step on from that is to really understand risk. You know, the risk associated with managing, storing that information, sharing it with third parties and so on. Understand the business impact of the loss. Understand some of the threats and the vulnerabilities associated with it. And again, ISF members will be very familiar with IRAM2, which allows them to do that in a fairly easy-to-use manner. I think the final piece, and this is an area where we're continuing to do work, is in this whole space of supplier security assessment. So we do have a number of supplier security assessment tools and frameworks that our members can use that allow them to reach out to third parties to ensure that the right processes are in place, to ensure that they can validate effectively some of those processes and that they can really set the ground rules that are in line with their risk profile that they might have established through IRAM2, that protect some of their mission-critical information that they've been able to identify through protecting the crown jewels, and that are consistent then with some of the controls that they want to have in place from a governance structure mm-hmm. standpoint that perhaps they've got from our standard of good practice. So a combination of different elements, all freely available to ISF members, that allow them to build up, I think, a fairly robust framework and way of managing data as it's shared with third parties.
Mm-hmm. How do organizations that are working with multiple third parties determine and prioritize which suppliers need the most attention?
Yeah, it's a very good question because, as I said earlier, most organizations have really come to supplier management based on contract value.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're talking about here is a shift you know, a change away from that. So there may be some cultural issues within the organization as well that you need to deal with. You know, procurement, for instance, emphasizing the fact that if it's over a certain contract value, they need to get involved. If it's below that, then they don't. Security may have a slightly different take on that. And I think this is one area where there needs to be a coming together of an understanding of what is important to the enterprise. And the way to do that is through the assessment of risk. Mm-hmm. So my advice is always to identify what your risk appetite is as an organization, and then to look at what data that affects. Once you can identify that the data elements, you can then move on to see how that flows across the enterprise mm-hmm. and beyond. That will quite naturally identify vendors, and that's your starting point. So follow the data mm-hmm. is really what we're saying in there. Once you've then identified the critical third parties, you can appoint vendor relationship managers. That could come from the business. It could come from a third-party supplier management function if you have one in your organization. But these are the people that really are responsible then for working with those third-party vendors to ensure that they understand the importance of the information and the data that they're holding, and also understand the process that you are expecting them to go through in order to protect that data prevent it from falling into the wrong hands.
Mm-hmm. Steve, I have a question about data storage in the cloud and trust. How is an organization's data stored in the cloud, and how can an organization validate the safety of its data?
Yeah, this is a question that I get very often. I think because so many more organizations are using cloud-based mm-hmm. systems. And I think that, you know, if you happen to be a small to mid-size enterprise and you're listening to this, it's of concern to you because perhaps you don't feel that you have the clout that a large organization might have. The good news, particularly when we're talking about cloud providers, is that there have been some very significant changes in recent months and years. So pretty much all of the major cloud providers that are out there are very happy to provide you with their guidelines for how they store your data. The other thing I think that you need to be doing, irrespective of your size, is you need to be adopting an approach of trust but verify.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you then go about effectively auditing some of the things that the cloud provider might be telling you? And again, they're quite used to that happening. If you're a large organization, clearly you're going to be in a slightly better place. If you're a smaller enterprise, you're probably going to get some of the more standard responses. But I think that what's important is that you can at least take those on board and assess whether or not they're adequate for your risk appetite. If they're not, you might need to look at perhaps changing your cloud provider mm-hmm. Or indeed changing the way in which you store some of your information. So you may decide, for instance, not to store some really mission-critical information with a cloud provider if you can't get the right level of feedback. And I think that, again, you know, that's probably more applicable to a smaller to mid-size enterprise than it is for the large organization. Again, I come back to this framework that you have to put in place that both parties agree to. You may not be able to do that as a smaller enterprise. You may not simply get the airspace with them, but that doesn't prevent you from building your own framework of risk based on the publicly available information that they will give you. So again, there is some homework that you can do yourself, even if you have perhaps a provider that isn't particularly helpful in this space. And then you can look at what the implications of that might be, particularly, say, in the case of a breach. I think one of the things that it's very important to understand in all of this, however, is that you as the organization are responsible, not the third party, mm-hmm. from a cloud perspective anyway. And there have been very many instances where there have been breaches that have come about as a result of a third party, where actually it's been the organization that has owned the data that has come unstuck. So responsibility cannot be outsourced. You are responsible for that information. You therefore have to go through whatever validation process is required in line with your risk appetite, in line with the mission criticality of the information that you're sharing. And you need to be comfortable. And you need to take a stance that says, when there is a breach, not if, so when there is a breach, am I going to be able to defend the position that I took? If you can't, or you're uncomfortable with that, then you need to do something different. And that may mean you're removing some of your data from a third party, or putting in place some more stringent guidelines and structure around exactly how that data is being shared.
So in summary, Steve, organizations should prioritize third parties who have access to mission-critical assets, whether that be patents or personal data. Understand where the data is, who has access, and what happens if, or as you said, when, there is a breach. They need to ensure that there is a framework in place as early as possible. Look to use third-party risk assessment methodologies and tools such as the ISF's Supply Chain Assurance Framework, IRAM 2 Risk Methodology, and Protecting the Crown Jewels to support engagement and manage risk to their data. They also need to appoint engagement managers for both parties. And finally, they need to remember the importance that good third-party management plays in meeting GDPR compliance. For more information, please visit securityforum.org.